Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of subjects. And for this, the arts hour, I interview guests from all areas of the arts. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. This week, my arts guests are Academy Award-nominated producer Rachel Winter and beloved actor, director and screenwriter William H. Macy from the Cinequest opening night film Crystal. Crystal is a wonderful, dramatic comedy which tells the story of a young man living a sheltered life who develops a crush on a stripper and joins her Alcoholics Anonymous group just so he can be in the same room with her. Crystal has a stellar ensemble cast of Nick Robinson, Grant Gustin, Rosario Dawson, William H. Macy, William Fichtner, Kathy Bates, John Leguizamo and Felicity Huffman. It was the opening night film at the 2018 Cinequest Film Festival where I saw the film and also spoke to actor William H. Macy and Academy Award nominated producer Rachel Winter. Crystal is both inspiring and highly entertaining and is released in theatres on April 13th. Let's hear my interview at Cinequest. So I'm here with William H. Macy and at Cinequest. You've got a long background in the arts as an actor, screenwriter, teacher, theatre director, director. I'm wondering if you can remember the first time that you became aware of the power of art to affect us on a deep level as well as entertain us.
Probably when I was a kid. I was just recounting this story to someone. My mother took me to see Elvis in, what was his first one, Jailhouse Rock? I think it was Jailhouse Rock. And I was just a kid, but when Elvis came on the screen, the theater fell about. I mean, they were just beside themselves, and I kind of knew who Elvis Presley was, but I thought, Lord, this is huge, and the guy's not even here. And he dies in that film, I believe. And it just destroyed all these young women in the theater. They were weeping like babies.
Yeah. So you just got a real sense of how art can just really, really move us.
And I'm a sucker for movies and television. I lose myself. Interestingly, when Rachel and I were looking for DPs for this thing, I would get their reel, and I would have to play it five times because I would get lost in the story and forget to look at the camera work.
Right.
I have to go back, and sometimes three times in, I would forget to look at the camera work because I'm vicariously wherever they put me.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. And what about you? I'm also here with Rachel Winter, who's an Academy Award-nominated producer, and she's the producer on Crystal, which is the film that William is here with. So what about you? Do you have an early memory of when you really were affected by art?
I do. I have three disparate moments that were, I guess, in retrospect, maybe sort of life-changing. I was very young, and my parents had recorded Singing in the Rain, so on, you know, VHS. Mm. So I remember where the commercials are. I used to watch it so much because I thought Lena Lamont, that was the funniest character in the Shining.
Talk to a bush.
And Cinema Firmament. Like, it's just, she was so funny. But I also watched it so much that I memorized the jingles from the commercials that were on at that time.
Wow.
And I loved that. That was an amazing movie. And then Airplane. I was in an airplane. I was with my, it was also how it affected our family. I was with my parents and my older brother, and just the four of us cracking up in a movie theater together.
Right.
I remember thinking that was pretty cool, even back then before screens and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then when I was in high school, I saw The Breakfast Club, and I could not get out of my seat. I think certainly that was the dual experience of being the target audience. Mm. And then also knowing that everything from that opening with the David Bowie changes,
yes,
quote, which Van Jones actually said this weekend on CNN on his show. He brought up that in reference to the young people in Parkland, Florida. And I thought to myself, you know, that was big for me. And it brought me right back to that. And then certainly just the filmmaking. It was deceptively simple, but archetypal and forever for me.
Yeah. Well, interesting. And William, you're here tonight as the director and one of the stars of the comedy Crystal. What attracted you to this story?
Will Aldous wrote it. I would say first, it's the nature of the dialogue. It was like a play. Mm. It's everybody's very smart. The speeches are very clever. And they're long. People really talk to each other. Mm. It's not very filmic the length of these speeches. And in fact, we ended up having to trim some of them up. And it's a wacky story. It's got some magical realism in it, which I'm a big fan of.
Mm, yeah.
And I think when somebody tells me a story, I think what I don't like is when I know where it's going. Mm. And what I delight in is when I'm constantly surprised at the twists and turns, and yet it's going someplace definite.
Yes.
And it's got a punchline, and I didn't see how they were going to get there, and I didn't see it coming. That's my favorite. And this certainly has that.
Right. And you direct and star. How do you approach balancing the demands of each job simultaneously?
It's not my favorite thing in the world to do, but Rachel is a filmmaker also, and we were Mutt and Jeff all the way through this thing. We were together on every single decision, and so knowing that Rachel was looking at the monitor, I felt a lot more comfortable. We found the time to rehearse those scenes, so I didn't have to direct while I was in the scenes. That had all been done.
Right.
I was acting with my wife, Felicity Huffman, who's just crackerjack in this thing. She's so good, so funny. And they're the best scenes in the movie, I think.
Oh, well, looking forward to seeing it. And Rachel, you're producing on this film. As I mentioned, you're an Academy Award-nominated producer. I think to people outside of film, production is like very mysterious. It's like, what do producers do? And it can be different on every film, can't it? Can you give us some idea of what you actually did maybe on this film as a producer?
Let's see. I don't know. I think, you know, I was saying earlier that a producer's job is to lead the troops into battle. And one of the things I think I do well, but the thing I enjoy so much, connecting with the folks who work on the film. So many people come to this movie because it's Bill, and they want to work for him. They want to work hard for him. They want to, you know, they want to try and dazzle him, not just because he's stepping into the director role, but because he's one of our most treasured actors. So believe me, I was not shy about exploiting the heck out of that. You get to work with Bill Macy, but trying to remember that we're all really lucky to do this for a living, and we should be having a good time. We could be doing something else. We could be selling insurance. We could be doing something else that, you know, might be great for some people. But if you are a storyteller by nature and you have figured out how to get to this point, you know, do a jig. We're very fortunate. And I think we had a great time.
Oh, that's good to hear. I understand Crystal explores relationships and self-perception through characters with lives that are challenging in quite diverse ways. I'm really interested in how art can help us process things. And I'm wondering whether from your own experience, whether you feel art can help us process difficult events, maybe even have a healing effect, both on those making art and those experiencing it.
I absolutely think it can help us process. The filmmakers, storytellers, essentially tell us where to look. Mm-hmm. And as the story unfolds, they say, this is important, look over there, now look over here. And through that process, I think the director, the artist, the writer, the actor can take a very complicated situation and find the simple truth about it. What's true about that?
Yes.
Something that we can all relate to.
Yeah.
So we can sort of take something as complicated as a battle and break it down into the fundamentals, what just happened. There's something lovely about combining the search for the truth with entertainment. I think that's mm-hmm. a very lovely fit, personally.
Yeah. What about you, Rachel?
What was the question?
Can help us process and yeah.
I definitely think so, and I hope so. I, as a producer, I have had to start smaller than that, which is simply like, is this thing going to haunt me? Am I going to wake up in the middle of the night and still be thinking about this script or this magazine article or this, whatever, this story? And I can't sell it if I don't believe. And then my hope, it begins as a hope that other people are going to want to live with it and process it and stay with it. And then I just would come back to sitting in that theater with the Breakfast Club and like, I can't get out of my chair. I just felt like John Hughes spoke directly to me.
Yeah.
So, I sort of carried that forward as
best
I could.
That's an interesting sort of way of looking at it. Yeah, it does all link together, doesn't
it? It does.
Because what really moves people is what then sells.
That's right. Yeah. So it's about being bold enough to dive into that water and have belief that other people are going to share your excitement about a subject.
Yeah.
There's I've always found it revelatory when you're dealing with people, especially in showbiz and filmmaking or storytelling, those who will say, that's not, it's sort of a bogus moment. It's not very true, but it's funny. And I think we should do it because it's funny. And I've always gravitated towards those storytellers who don't allow themselves to do that, who say, well, it's got to be true and it's got to be funny.
Yeah.
And if it's not, keep working.
You're really shooting high there.
And it sounds like that's what you believe Crystal is. It's got a lot of truth in it, and it's
absolutely
funny.
Yeah, I firmly believe the audience is smarter than we are the best day we were born. They're never wrong. And that's a cruel mistress sometimes because you're so clear about what you've done and that the audience doesn't respond to it. But I believe in them with all of my heart.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my guests, beloved actor William H. Macy and Academy Award-nominated producer Rachel Winter, whose wonderful film Crystal is opening in theatres on April 13th. We're going to a break now, but join me for more conversation after these messages.
Do you like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
No white horses to play the game, and I wish I knew your name. Something about just that. I think that there's more to us than just that.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Bookshop Santa Cruz has been an independent bookseller for over half a century in the community we love. Visit Bookshop Santa Cruz downtown. We love our customers and the books that make it all possible. Bookshop Santa Cruz, online and in downtown Santa Cruz.
Bookshop Santa Cruz has a regular program of wonderful authors appearing to discuss and sign their books. Coming up on April 9th is Weiqi Wang talking about her award-winning debut coming-of-age novel, Chemistry. Weiqi Wang is a 2017 5 Under 35 honoree of the National Book Foundation. And with a PhD from Harvard and an MFA from Boston, Weiqi Wang has combined literature and science in an original, moving, amusing and insightful way. April 9th is your chance to meet Weiqi Wang and hear what inspired her. It's a free event at Bookshop Santa Cruz, 7 p.m, Monday, April 9th. Then on April 12th, New York Times bestselling author Meg Wolitzer will be at Bookshop Santa Cruz with her new novel, The Female Persuasion, one of the buzziest books of the year. Find out what all the buzz is about and meet Meg in person April 12th, 7 p.m, Bookshop Santa Cruz. More information at bookshopsantacruz.com. Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. This week, my arts guests are Academy Award-nominated producer Rachel Winter and beloved actor, director and screenwriter William H. Macy from the wonderful film Crystal, which opens in theatres on April 13th. I caught up with Rachel Winter in Los Angeles to talk some more about Crystal and also her inspiring career in film. Let's hear some of that conversation. So your career is embedded in the arts. I'm wondering whether you grew up in a creative environment.
I would say that I grew up in an environment that enjoyed the arts, embraced the arts, but I didn't grow up with a family or in an industry family, as they say. But, you know, through the Jewish Community Center in the North Valley, where I grew up in Granada Hills, you know, we participated in the plays. My parents, my brother, I did as well, loved it. You know, and obviously this was the 70s, so it was a very different time, staying up late, but with this, you know, really fun community. But that was pretty much the exposure. That was really it. My parents weren't movie buffs. We didn't have any friends in the industry either.
So when did you decide that you wanted to go into film professionally?
I was going to graduate from UC Santa Barbara. So my last year of college, I was going to graduate a little bit early, and I sort of needed something to do that last. That's the quarter system. So the last quarter, and I do not know why or how or when I just got this weird inspiration to go to the head of the film department, Paul Lazarus, who died. He was an amazing, amazing guy, and I don't know what possessed me, but I went to him and I said, I have an opportunity to have an internship in Los Angeles, so I would drive down a couple times a week. Would you give me 4 units and a grade? And he said, sure, I just need the name of the producer. So I rode my bike back home and called my mom. I said, do we know anybody in the film business? And I had totally lied, made up this whole story, which to this day I don't know I had not been in the film program. I would have been an English and a creative writing major. And it was just such a strange thing. So anyway, we called. My mom said, yeah, we do know somebody, but he does pornography. And I said, I don't care. Give me his number. So I called up this gentleman, who shall remain nameless, and softcore porn, by the way.
Right,
let me just add that in. And he's, Rachie, sure, I remember you. Yeah, what can I do for you? And he gave me an internship. Believe it or not, there's, you know, script development and all that kind of stuff in the softcore industry. And that's how I got my start.
So what appealed to you about producing out of all the aspects of film?
That is a really, really good question. I don't know necessarily if a young person who's being exposed, especially on the production side, which is what I went into very quickly. Yes, still in the softcore porn side of things, but nonetheless, you know, PAing and cable wrangling and, you know, ultimately like sort of more second ADing and that kind of thing. But I'm not sure that you're zeroing in on, okay, well, what's the producer doing? I think maybe people who've gone to film school, people who have had exposure before, I think they know to maybe focus. Well, that looks interesting. I'm going to look at that. I think I was really just letting everything wash over me. Definitely romanced by the traveling band of gypsies that I was meeting on production to production. So it was more in a general sort of like the movie magic was sort of seducing me more than that looks like an interesting path or profession.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. I understand Crystal took 14 years to get made. And how does that happen? And what kept you committed to making it?
Or why does that happen? Yes. Why would anyone allow that to happen? I think...
Well, I don't say that in a critical way. I just think people outside the industry don't realize that a lot of films take a long time to get made.
Right. And then, of course, you know, people like me joke about it because if you lose your sense of humor, you're really screwed. It happens because, or I just speak specifically in the case of Crystal. So I guess I read the script in 2002. I'm horrible at math, so sometimes I mess up the years. But I know I read the script in and around 2002 and was like, this is fantastic. And I had read Will Aldous, the writer. Mm-hmm. I had read him before. Embarked on these year-long, you know, epic journeys to try and get his films made. Very challenging because, you know, you've seen the movie, you know, he has a singular voice. He's such a unique writer. And that's part of the challenge. So already you have that as part of the challenge. I think also on the independent side, I had learned early on from mentors like Carrie Brokaw, who had done, you know, Drugstore Cowboy and The Player and Shortcuts and incredible iconic independent films. I learned through sort of watching him do his thing, like there's a cyclical nature. So sometimes you're at the top of the cycle where like, everybody, you know, there's a big Sundance and tons of sales. And then, of course, you can then it shifts again where it's really challenging, where a couple of years have gone by and there haven't been any breakout hits like a Brothers McMullen and El Mariachi or, you know, whatever. And then, of course, Blair Witch or and then off to today. You know, we've got some really great examples of those breakout indies, and of course this year with Get Out and something like that, which is just phenomenal. So it depends on where you are in the cycle. That's part of it. And then the other part of it is there's what's being driven by foreign sales. So then how pinned against the wall are you to get Tom Cruise in your $3 million movie? You know, so that's also part of it.
Because for foreign sales, you need more recognizable names.
That's right. So if the market's in a certain way, good or bad, you know, now I think it's kind of, now it's really, we've gotten into a pretty solid. I don't think there's that much change basically now. I don't think that the shifts are as wild as you know they once were, or that the cycles are. Right. I think now we are settling into a new world. You know, the Netflix world, where things just are going to be what they're going to be, and everyone from the studio level on down, meaning, and I say that in the budget fashion, will have to figure out how they're going to make a hit. So I personally don't think that people who make independent films, I don't think we set out to make hits. I think we set out to get our movies made. And get them made, do a good job, honor the original vision as best we can, while, of course, we have to play by the rules with regard to financing and yes, foreign and all of the things that guide how you need to cast a movie and what the budget needs to be. Of course, there's always going to be that. But at the end of the day, like with Crystal, you read something in 2002. Well, if I read something better, I'll do that either as well, or that would give me the excitement and the passion to move off of something that is just not working. It's not coming together. But if you still wake up in the middle of the night and you're still thinking about a script, or when you pick it up again and you're still laughing, or you're still crying, or you're still getting calls, whatever happened with that movie, I love that movie, or actors, or an amazing, like a beloved icon like William H. Macy says, I'm going to hang in there with you, then the job is to actually wait out the 14 years and just keep banging the drum. So that's why.
Crystal has elements of magical realism. Was that one element of the script that appealed to you?
Yes. I think it was a part, the magical realism is part of what makes it special, what makes it unique, what makes it really ballsy. And it's so well written and so clear in its mission that as a reader, you're not separating it out and thinking, ooh, now we're at the part that has magical realism. The character of Satan just became part of the ensemble. And so I don't remember thinking, ooh, how are we going to handle this? You just get sucked in a 360 way. And so I never separated it out.
And the way it's written, I mean, particularly the main character played by Nick Robinson, it's not real in the sense of that's not how people speak, but I love it. I mean, it's kind of like Aaron Sorkin's approach, you know, just it being more theatrical in a way. And I wish we saw that more in film, because I don't think everything has to be a sort of slice of life or feel like it could actually be spoken that way or whatever, especially when you're coming from an art perspective.
I actually think it's a bit of a combo platter. I don't think anyone I know speaks that way, but it is quite Southern. It's a literary family. We do set up that Bill Macy's character of Wyatt, this, you know, erudite professor with quite a bit of arrogance, that people are going to enjoy listening to him speak that way. And he's got two boys that grew up listening to him and an artist mother. So it was a bit of a combo platter. It's real for them. And it's also what sucks in, you know, Rosario Dawson's character, the title character of Crystal.
That's a good point, actually, because I think there are people who do speak like that. It's just not very many people.
That's right.
But it doesn't mean there aren't.
And I will say that I agree with you that I think part of the job, and now more than ever, part of the job is really entertaining people. And so I don't always want to go and spend 2 hours listening to people who speak exactly like me and who are worried about exactly the same things that I'm worried about. And I think that sort of, you could call it wish fulfillment, you can call it escapism, whatever it is. I think maybe what you've responded to and what it seems people are responding to is it does feel like a lovely trip outside of yourself.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
One of the main characters is a teenage boy called Bobby who's in a wheelchair, but William H. Macy has said that he's really the most level-headed person in his family. He's not even the disabled one in a way, and it challenges what our definition of being disabled is. We don't see disability much in film unless the film is about disability, so it's good to see a role where the character's disability isn't the main reason he's in the story. You know, it's not tokenism. Ellen Barkin said recently, in response to criticisms about LGBT representation in Black Panther, does everything have to be about everything all the time? And storytelling and filmmaking is by its nature a focus on certain elements. Whilst obviously we want to see more diverse representation, I'm wondering if you think there's a balance to be struck.
I think balance is always a good thing. I think in our business, we have brilliant, creative, dramatic people. And I do think the pendulum tends to swing very far before it settles in maybe a better place. And I think we are in the, I think recently, I don't know if it was Spielberg, or, you know, we are, and lots of people are calling it a watershed moment. And there are so many things happening and exciting things. I think what's happened with Black Panther is incredible. I loved the movie. I loved going to the movie with my children and my father, multi-generational experience. And like, you know what I mean? My kids, they don't give a shit that this is an all-Black cast. They just loved the movie. And I loved the movie and I just had a great time. So there's so much value in that, in as we move forward, and in terms of, you know, this is an incredible time for women, and that pendulum settling in the right place is going to benefit film and television and women and the generations that follow. But yes, I think we do tend to swing a little wildly until we find the balance.
I'm wondering what you consider the magic to be of getting projects made that you believe in. What does your process entail?
Passion is the answer. It is really just falling in love with something, having a vision for it, and figuring out how am I going to sell my vision to other people. Mm-hmm. So much of being a producer, in my opinion, is being a salesperson. Mm-hmm. And I can't sell it if I don't love it, because mm-hmm. people are smart. I know lots of people say otherwise, and I'm going to completely take out anything political. We're going to leave that over to the side. But for the purpose of this conversation, I believe, you know, people are smart, and they, even if they don't know what the hell you're talking about, they want to feel something. They want to feel something in your conversation. They want to feel something if they read something you've written or if they see one of your films. So if I'm having a conversation with somebody and I am half-assing it because I'm doing someone a favor, or this is commerce over art for me, the sales pitch isn't there. Mm. The passion isn't there for me. I'm just speaking for myself. There are people who do what I do and do it so much better than I do it because they have a business sense that I maybe don't have. Mm. But in terms of picking up something, sticking with it, seeing it through, and banging the drum, never say die. It's just, I just see something special. I envision people sitting in a dark theater watching this movie and laughing or crying or enjoying it and taking a piece of it with them. And that's sort of, I just keep my eye on that.
Yeah. I think that's a good point, because I think, I'm not even sure if it's an intellectual response, but it's more of a gut response. I think you can feel when somebody really is truthfully enthusiastic.
Absolutely. And I know that that's true for me. And most of the time, I'll put my money where my mouth is and listen to what I'm saying in this moment. And, you know, when I haven't, sometimes it's worked out and sometimes it hasn't. But I would say it's certainly the most gratifying to come out the other side on something like Dallas Buyers Club or certainly Crystal or Stealing Cars or something that you just believe in and think some people need to see.
Yes, yeah.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my guests, William H. Macy and Academy Award-nominated producer Rachel Winter, whose wonderful film Crystal is opening in theatres on April 13th. We're going to a break now, but join me for more conversation after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Bookshop Santa Cruz has a regular program of wonderful authors appearing to discuss and sign their books. Coming up on April 9th is Weiqi Wang talking about her award-winning debut coming-of-age novel, Chemistry. Weiqi Wang is a 2017 5 Under 35 honoree of the National Book Foundation. And with a PhD from Harvard and an MFA from Boston, Weiqi Wang has combined literature and science in an original, moving, amusing and insightful way. April 9th is your chance to meet Weiqi Wang and hear what inspired her. It's a free event at Bookshop Santa Cruz, 7 p.m, Monday, April 9th. Then on April 12th, New York Times bestselling author Meg Wolitzer will be at Bookshop Santa Cruz with her new novel, The Female Persuasion, one of the buzziest books of the year. Find out what all the buzz is about and meet Meg in person April 12th, 7 p.m, Bookshop Santa Cruz. More information at bookshopsantacruz.com. Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my guest from the wonderful dramatic comedy film Crystal, which is opening in theatres on April 13th. Let's hear some more from Academy Award nominated producer Rachel Winter.
I imagine you must get a lot of work presented to you for consideration. I was going to ask you how you choose projects. Is it? I mean, you've talked about it quite a lot, about things that keep you up at night thinking about it and what you feel people need to see and what excites you. I mean, is that the answer?
It is the answer. I'm also I'm extremely fortunate that the need for me to balance art and commerce isn't the same for everybody. I'm super lucky. I get to choose. I don't have to take projects if I don't think I can contribute something. Mm-hmm. And I actually recently, just this morning, I turned down a movie that I wasn't even going to be able to read this script. I have too many things that are requiring my brain and my heart now. Mm-hmm. That I will hurt that project. I will not be able to give it what it needs to have, especially the indies, especially someone's passion project. They are ready to sweat blood for their thing, and God bless them. And I'm going to, for me to sign on to something, even if I fell in love with it at this point, it would be very, very hard because I just don't want to let anybody down. And the indies need more love and more attention. And it's wonderful that people are interested in working with me, and I'm hugely flattered every time. But I had to grow up at some point and also not think like, oh, well, they won't call anymore if I say no.
Right. Yeah.
But I won't. I would never hurt another filmmaker that way. Now I realize that's what you're doing when you're signing on to something that you can't deliver on.
Right. Yeah. Imagine also there must be a real capacity for creative visualization, because it's not everyone, I think, who could just read a script and really envisage what it's going to be as a film.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I haven't thought about that in a long time. I think a lot of people get their, they exercise that muscle or create that muscle if you get a development executive job where you're reading a lot of scripts. That is the job, doing the coverage. And I had that job for a while, and that's really how you learn, you know. And then of course, when you are working for a company, the responsibility is a little bit larger. You have to know how to read a script and be like, well, I don't give a shit about any of these characters, but this is precisely the mandate of the company, or this is exactly what my boss is looking for. You know, so you have to be a little bit more open-minded. But when you work for yourself and you really just sort of, what am I going to spend my time away from my children?
Right.
And,
you
know, what am I going to invest my time in and hopefully be successful at it? I think you do need to be grabbed in that way.
Yeah.
I feel like, I'm not sure I answered your question, but
yeah, you did.
Okay. What was the question again?
Totally did.
Okay, good.
Something I've covered previously in the topic air of my show is whether women have to be like men to be equal. For example, female action heroes kicking butt. I think women should have the option to do whatever they want, but at the same time, I think feminism has failed in a way by allowing the discourse to be framed around, can women compete in a man's world, in a man's way, and if they can, then they pass muster. We see this a lot in the corporate environment, and so I'm wondering what your experience has been as a woman producer in a business dominated by men, whether there's been a pressure to go about your job in a certain way in order to succeed.
Oh, that's such a good question. I have a lot of thoughts on it. I will say, so we were still living in New York last year, and I took my daughter to see Wonder Woman. And I love Patty Jenkins. I'm just like such a huge fan. And I was so happy that that this movie came together the way it did. And she did such a great job, and everybody did such a great job, and the performances are wonderful. And I remember thinking how excited I was that, yes, this is a female action hero, heroine kicking ass the way a male, action star would, or the character would. You know, it's a superhero. But I loved that the message was love. And so to me, it felt like embracing, it wasn't a female superhero and that's it.
Yeah.
It was a female superhero, but with a journey that matched a woman's journey. And that's the way to do it. In my humble opinion, I was just like cheering. And Simone and I have matching Wonder Woman t-shirts. And I've sent like, you know, 3 love letters to Patty Jenkins. And I'm just like, I just was really blown away by that. So to me, that's part of the answer. That eventually we're going to get to a point where the men are going to have to do things more like the way a woman would, because and that was sort of the thing. I will just speak about this politically, whether or not you're a fan of Hillary Clinton. I certainly knew enough people that were really interested in seeing what the world might look like with a woman as president of the United States of America, just simply like, well, we all been doing it a really long time this way. Maybe we should see what this could look like. And I have had, I've been very fortunate. I haven't had a ton of terrible run-ins.
Yeah.
Yes, I am doing laundry at the same time. That's what that beep, beep, being, beep, beep is. I've been lucky. I haven't had too many issues. I will say that it's quite true that even now, and I have, I'm sure it'll take a very long time for this to change. It is not a good idea until a man says it, and you will be sitting in a room with other producers, with financiers, actors, key crew, and you're problem solving. You know, you've hit a couple of bumps. You're just talking with your director and everybody, you know, it's a collaborative business and you're all throwing out ideas, and unbelievable that it really, I will say something. I will make a suggestion. I will come up with a plan. And it is not until 10 minutes later when a male counterpart will say the exact same thing and the room will say, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's always like, you know, you kind of want to cry, but you definitely have to laugh. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it means that I have to talk louder. And it doesn't mean that I have to yell. But I do have to just keep going.
Yes.
And be aware, and maybe think about the different ways I can express myself that might reach more ears quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think we are in a place of like really examining communication.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, what I'm trying to do for myself and for the betterment of my productions.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a real truth that a lot of men who are decent, for want of a better word, they just don't even see any of this.
Right.
They just don't realize it. I know there was a study, I forget which university in England, but they already had a program in place to make sure there wasn't discrimination about women, but they decided to do some research on their own hiring process. And they actually found that a woman and a man applied for the job. They had exactly the same, you know, qualifications, the same experience. They'd done the same amount of published research. And what they found was that of the man, they were like, wow, that's really impressive that he got these research papers published by this age. And with the woman, they said, she must have had some real support from members of her department in order to get published so young. And they were stunned because they really thought that they, you know, had all this awareness. And it's just, that was the difference. It's just, they just see things completely differently. And I think, people, you know, men don't even realize.
They don't. Know. And it's really not their fault. They have been socialized. This goes back to a very primal thing. You know, once upon a time, you know, it was a certain way. It's deeply embedded. It will start to become a man's fault.
Yeah.
There's access to too much research, too much information to be denied. I think men are going to have to start evolving a little bit faster, and they're going to have to push themselves. But I don't blame... This is just a deeply embedded issue. So we've got to keep pushing for this more cultural, societal revolution.
Yes.
Or evolution.
Yeah. And I think you're right. You know, it is very embedded. And, you know, masculine traits are valued higher culturally. And it's not just men. It's masculine traits, whether they're in men or women.
It's equated with strength. And,
You have such a deep passion for what you do. What do you feel film has to offer as a means of conveying meaning that other art forms don't?
Oh, my God. You know, I think that you don't have to know anything about anything to sit down and enjoy a film. I think, but the same could be true for a painting hanging on a wall. I think you can stand in front of it and you may or may not feel something. But I think with film, I only know from my own experience, you know, like the films that inspired me, which I know we talked about. When you can't get out of your chair, or you will say those, you'll quote that movie for the next 20 years of your life. I just think they can help shape a person. God, and that sounds really sort of too important, but it I know it did for me. And I also think, again, we are in a place where we need to be entertained. We need to be reminded to dream. And I think people are finding so many creative ways to encourage that dreaming, and still have something to say that is kind of deep and can reach a broad audience at the same time. Like, I don't think it has to be a movie that's, you know, so intimate or small. I think it can really be a larger, like, again, like a Black Panther.
And I think you're right. I think there's an accessibility about film that has a broad reach.
And I know, you know, I love art, but I feel intimidated by it. I don't feel like I, you know, again, I'm talking about paintings or even sculpture at time, which as I've gotten older, I really appreciate the beauty of it. But I don't know that I necessarily like trust my own judgment on it. Do I even think this is good or bad or interesting? Or I just appreciate it. But I know for film, it's been a way for me to connect with ideas and themes, and messages, which can be a bad word sometimes in our business, but to connect really deeply and take it with me.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me, and I wish you all the best with Crystal's release.
Thank you so much, April 13th.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and thanks again there to Academy Award-nominated producer Rachel Winter, and earlier in the show, thanks to William H. Macy, and she was referring there to the film Crystal, which if you've been listening to the whole show, you will know about, but it's a wonderful dramatic comedy. Just to remind you again, it tells the story of a young man who's living a sheltered life due to a medical condition, who develops a crush on a stripper and joins her Alcoholics Anonymous group just so he can be in the same room with her. It's a really interesting, moving, thought-provoking, funny film. I really recommend it. It has an amazing cast: Nick Robinson, Grant Gustin, Rosario Dawson, William H. Macy, William Fichtner, Kathy Bates, John Leguizamo, and Felicity Huffman. It's in theatres, as Rachel said, from April 13th, so look out for it. And I can guarantee that you will really enjoy it. Certainly that you will find it very, very interesting and thought-provoking. But I thought it was wonderful when I saw it at Cinequest, the opening night film this year. Remember that you can go to the show's website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, if you've missed any shows. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to being with you again next time.